Author Michael Crummie is joining us. His titles over the years include River Thieves, The Wreckage, Galore, Sweetland, The Innocents, and the latest, The Adversary, which arrived in stores and online yesterday. Michael specializes in historical fiction that reveals the fascinating and surprising stories within Newfoundland and Labrador. He was born there, grew up in Labrador. He took up and studied poetry at Memorial University in St. John's and started nearly 40 years of award-winning work. After years in Kingston, Ontario, he returned to St. John's in 2001. A book of short stories led to his debut novel, River Thieves. It was a bestseller and shortlisted for multiple awards. More novels, poetry, a stage play, and a short film poured out of Crummie in the years that followed. 2014's Sweetland, which is a great book, was shortlisted for a Governor General's Award. It will soon be a major feature film.
Minor feature film.
I'm not going to correct that. That is hilarious. Man of words. All right, here we go. In 2019, The Innocents, his story of young siblings left to fend for themselves on the rough Newfoundland coastal landscape, not only was a bestseller, but a real conversation starter. It was shortlisted for the Giller. His latest is The Adversary, and once again takes us back into historical Newfoundland, this time a ferocious contest between two competing captains of industry centered on the isolated outport of Mockbeggar on Newfoundland's northern coastline. Here we meet a nasty piece of work that is a mercantile baron, Abe Strap, and his nemesis, the Widow Canes. These two despise each other in ways only the imagination of Michael Crummie could conjure. And so while they carve up the Atlantic fishery in the name of destroying one another, we meet a vast collection of locals who succeed or fail based on this terrible personal battle. Church officials, fishermen, visiting captains and their crews, thieves, pirates, servants, even the members of a successful brothel. And this land has its own identity as well. Cruel winters and storms, fishing seasons that give and some that don't. With these two powers, their followers, families, and a wide collection of unforgettable characters, you can squint your brain and call this the historical Newfoundland Game of Thrones. It is vast in scope, an absolute page-turner, and in my mind, the most ambitious Michael Crummie project to date. Michael Crummie, welcome to the New Classical FM.
Great to be here, and thank you for that. Listening to that, thinking there's a lot in that book.
There is a lot in this book.
I forgot about most of that.
Why has Newfoundland been this bottomless well for you? You're raised there, you live there. Not everyone can do what you do or even has a deep interest the way you do about the peoples and stories. So why is it you can do what you do?
Well, the reason I have been writing about Newfoundland all my life, I think, is because that's the place that made me. And Newfoundland, because it has its history, is so isolated from the rest of the world when it comes to European settlement in the Americas. It's sort of off on its own, and it developed its own particular culture, own particular personality. So to a certain extent, when I'm writing about the place, I'm trying to figure out, well, who the hell am I?
Right.
Why am I the way I am?
I can tell you from experience, I have in-laws now for the last 10 years or so from Corner Brook.
Right.
And so I've made the trip two or three times now. And I'm a kid from Victoria, British Columbia. And so Newfoundland and the cities and towns and little hamlets of Newfoundland have been so exotic to me over the time. The geography is so exotic, the culture, the music, the stories that get told. And it does feel like a bottomless well that you can dip into.
Yeah, it's certainly as a writer. I mean, I'm often asked, would I consider writing a book not set in Newfoundland?
Right.
And my answer is always, well, I probably could, but I don't know why I would bother. The place is just full of incredible stories.
At every turn.
At every turn. And
down every little dirt road, down every little coastal area.
You just have to go to like a little corner store around the bay and listen to people talk. And there are stories there that I've never heard before.
Yeah.
So in that sense, as a writer, just I don't need to look anywhere else. I will never run out in Newfoundland.
I'm curious because your books are beloved at this point, bestsellers, award winners, what have you. And I would imagine there's a certain pride from that province getting behind you. But at the same time, there are heroes and villains in your books over the years. And I wonder if that must be a bit of a weight to be the representative for the province on some level.
Yeah. I mean, thankfully, there are a ton of other fantastic writers from Newfoundland.
Of course, I've read a whole bunch.
Yeah, and filmmakers and musicians. If I ever felt like I was out there alone representing the place, I'd be an idiot. But, I mean, the higher your profile gets outside of the province, the more people point to you to say, oh, if you want to know what Newfoundland's about, this is somebody you should be looking at.
Right.
And I'm always really uncomfortable with that, just because there's nothing homogenous about Newfoundland, really. Despite the fact on the surface, it does look like that, right?
Right.
I mean, it's a tiny genetic pool. It's a tiny population. Everybody, up until the last generation or so, everybody lived the same life to a certain extent. And yet, despite all that, there are just a myriad of things that being a Newfoundlander means. And people's experience of growing up there are just so diverse in so many different ways.
And,
so,
and wildly specific and exotic to somebody who's not.
That's right.
From there.
Yeah.
And I think that's what makes these novels so great.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thanks. And as somebody who grew up, I was born in 65, and I grew up in a mining town in central Newfoundland, right? So not a fishing community.
Right.
So I have that same sense of that world as being exotic and very specific, and something I think part of my obsession comes from feeling a little bit outside it.
One of the things that you do is you jump around through time to go back 100 years, 200 years with you is such a journey. Sweetland would be a bit more of a contemporary story, but both this one and others, The Adversary, The Innocents, take us much further back. So talk about digging that far back into history as opposed to your own experiences growing up.
Yeah. I will say that I had no intentions starting out to be an historical novelist or to be known as an historical novelist.
Right.
That seemed like a really negative pigeonhole, you know?
Really?
Yeah. I didn't want to be pigeonholed at all, I guess.
That's fair.
But as I keep saying, it's getting harder and harder to be pissed off when people call me an historical novelist, because really, almost everything I've written novel-wise has been set in the past.
Right.
And even something like Sweetland, which is contemporary, I mean, the second half of that book feels like something from 200 years ago.
Yeah, and maybe the land itself helps with that.
It
right?
does, yeah. Yeah. But I have had, I've been forced to think about, well, why am I doing this? Why am I always going back that far? And I think it has something to do with the fact that, you know, I grew up listening to my parents' stories of what it was to grow up in an outport in Newfoundland in the 30s and 40s.
Mm-hmm.
That was a life that was not a lot different from what Newfoundland was like 100 years before them or 200 years before them. The world that I grew up in, I think it gave me a false sense of how much I have control over in my life. And I think the modern world has done that for almost all of us. It disguises how vulnerable we are in the world. And I think the stories of these people who grew up in a place and in a time when it was impossible to disguise that, when on a daily basis you were made keenly aware that if things go bad, they go really bad really quickly.
Very fast.
I think there's something about that that appeals to me as a way of peeling away that illusory layer we have, that somehow we're beyond that.
I think it gives those characters that you've built over the years, I've had a great connection with them just over that alone. They are surviving. They are facing great adversity. Mm-hmm. And if you are just joining us, award-winning best-selling author Michael Crummy is here. His latest is The Adversary, and it tells the story of a feud born of fury and hubris and spite and hurt. It is massive in scope. The characters and scenes unforgettable, all taking place in historical Newfoundland. You won't forget it. The Adversary, in stores online now. So I received an advanced copy of this, as you can see, well-worn. It was spent a lot of time in an Algonquin park at a cabin over the summer. It felt like you were thinking about this one for a while.
It's always a bit of a mystery to me where the books come from.
Of course.
And when I finished The Innocents, I had no notion of what would follow it.
The reason I ask is because there's so many characters in this one. There are so many people to keep track of. There's multiple storylines. You've got the two central figures.
Yeah.
It just feels so big in scope that I felt like you were maybe just waiting to build something this big.
Yeah, no, it was kind of, it was more that when I got the notion of writing a book, this book is kind of, I think of it as a companion piece to The Innocents.
Right.
Because it takes place at the exact same period of time.
Makes
like
sense.
It starts when The Innocents starts. And a lot of the walk-on characters from The Innocents end up in this book as well, right? So what I decided I wanted to do was to write a book that was the exact opposite of The Innocence, a mirror image. So in The Innocence, it's a brother and sister who survive really difficult circumstances because they love each other.
For a lot of the book, it's just the two of them.
It's just the two of them. And
different than this book.
Yeah. And as dark as that book is, the light in the book is the love between the, even when they don't like each other that much.
I'll just quickly say about The Innocence, people have really visceral reactions to that book. And some people, like me, feel the light in that book, but some people just, they can't get over certain elements of that book, and they just want it to be different than it is.
I sympathize because it's based on a true story that I found in the archives, and I wanted nothing to do with it. And writing that book, in a way, was an attempt to exorcise those kids from my head, you know? I wanted to write a book that honored them in a way, that showed that two young people could find themselves in these circumstances and make these decisions, and for it to be not a horrible, evil thing that they did, but just circumstances.
And I feel like you succeeded there.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. So what I wanted to do with this book was to take a brother and sister who despise each other, right? So where The Innocence was kind of a twisted Adam and Eve story,
right. This
is a Cain and Abel story.
All right, so let's talk about these two. Abe Strapp.
Yeah.
I don't think Abe will ever leave my mind. Thanks for that.
Yep, you're welcome.
And so this man is a real piece of work. How did you conjure him?
Well, he's based on an historical figure that I found when I was doing the research for The Innocence.
Okay.
There was a merchant named George Ryder in Bonavista, Newfoundland, around the turn of the 19th century. Complete bastard.
Right.
For lack of a better word.
Really awful guy.
Drunkard, bully. He shot and killed an Irish servant in an argument. The only repercussion for that was he was eventually made a justice of the peace.
Right.
He recruited and brought prostitutes from St. John's to Bonavista and set up his own brothel. Everybody there hated him and tried to get rid of him, and they couldn't.
Okay, so that sounds like Abe Strapp to me.
And so that's what I had in my head as a place to start. And honestly, I could not get the book going because I thought he's a dead end.
Right.
He has no interior life. He struck me in many ways as the kind of strong men we see popping up around the world these days in fascistic-leaning governments.
Sure. Big baby, can't see past his own sphere of...
Oh, an id on two legs, right? Who can only measure their worth in terms of how much do I own, how many people do I control. All of their relationships with the world are transactional.
So you're feeling some writer's block, but you've got Abe, and so we bring in the widow Cain.
Well, it was one of those duh moments you have as a writer where I was like, well, if this is a mirror image of The Innocence, then there has to be a sister. And as soon as that thought occurred to me, I had a book. I'm sure it wasn't like this, but my memory is I had that thought, I sat down, and I wrote the book.
Well, when they make the movie about you, that's a nice scene, right? So that'll work out well.
Yes, another minor motion picture.
For now.
Yeah. And
she is such a different person compared to her brother, and yet not.
And my sense of those two was that they're very different in terms of how they operate in the world. They're very different in terms of what they think of as valuable to a certain extent. But they're exactly the same in this way, and that is that all of their relationships in the world are transactional, and their only interest is getting and keeping power. And so they are equally as bad as one another, but quite different. Like, the widow is quite capable of making other people think that she's on their side.
And cares about them.
Or that she has their concerns at heart.
Yeah.
But for her, that's just another tool. Abe, you can see coming from 100 miles away. And his only real skill, I think, in this book... And it was something that I saw in a particular president of the United States recently. His only real skill is he knows how to mess with people. He knows that if he wants to take someone down a peg or two, or to get rid of somebody, or to just mess with their heads, he knows how to go about that.
And so these two are just at each other's throat for the entire book, and they both have wins, they both have losses. And I'll say about the widow Cain's, in her case, I mean, she knows, she's aware of a woman's role in that time, and those goalposts around her are almost what allow her to succeed, because she just knows how to work within those parameters.
Well, she's somebody who is incredibly strategic in everything she does.
Yeah.
one of the things that I really had to work hard at in this book was trying to move past my and a reader's impulse to sympathize with her, because she's born into a completely unfair system. So she, unlike Abe, is really good at the business. She understands how business works. She is really good at the job she does working for her father. Then her father goes and signs everything, the entire business, over to the son.
But of course.
Yeah, so that was inevitable if I was writing about that time. That's how it would work. But it also fits into the Cain and Abel story in the Bible, right? You have two brothers who make their offerings to God. One is accepted and one is not. There's no explanation in the Bible. Like, no. We never learn why one is sort of rejected. And it's the same here. It's completely arbitrary. The widow sees that this makes no sense. And that's part of what fuels her. But my sense of her is that that doesn't change her. That's not why she is the way she is. She's always been the way she is. That just adds a little extra anger to her goal of destroying her brother, yeah. Either by swallowing his business or by getting rid of him completely.
Just not having him here anymore.
Yeah.
They both have these very important characters around them, and quite a few. So we should point out that, yes, it's Abe's Trap. Yes, it's the Widow Cain's, but all these characters around. And they all have great interest in seeing the brother or the sister succeed.
Right.
And that pushes the narrative quite a bit. And all the fishing and ships from far off lands and colorful characters that come and go in this sort of epic feud. It felt so ambitious. Was it feeling that way as you were pouring it out of your pen? There were a lot of moving parts.
There were a lot of moving parts. And I think part of the reason for that is because in some ways, both of those two characters, which are at the center of the book, for a writer, they're kind of dead ends. They're black holes. They don't have interior lives particularly, and they don't change. Who they are at the beginning of the book is who they are at the end. So as a writer, where I had to find the story was in the characters who orbit those black holes. So for me, a lot of the interest in the story and a lot of the movement in the story in terms of characters making consequential decisions for good or bad is about their relationship to those black holes. Yeah. How do they see them? What do they want from being in that orbit? Or how do they get sucked in and twisted, even if they don't want to be part of that orbit?
Absolutely. And there's definitely characters in there that are really just trying to survive. And that's what informs their decisions.
Yeah. And I think, again, I was thinking, I mean, in a lot of ways, I think I was writing out my own sense of dread and frustration and anger about the world as it's been unfolding over the last 8 or 10 years.
Let's talk about that. I mean, you gave yourself license to go big here in the darkness. You put us through a lot, and there's sex, violence, cruelty, abuse of power, and I felt like going through the books, this felt like you took it about as far as you maybe ever have.
Yeah.
Is that true?
I think so. I think that when I decided that this was the book I was going to write, I kind of made a pact with myself that I wasn't going to give myself an out, and I wasn't going to give a reader an out either. A lot of what I feel like my job as a writer is, in other cases, has been to like see all sides of an issue or to flip a coin so that we see both sides.
It's sort of journalistic about it.
And looking for the light in the world, you know, and looking for the light in characters. And in this circumstance, given the world that we've been living in for the last 8 years, I wanted to take the worst of what I had seen around us and shrink it down into these two characters in this tiny fishing outport 200 years ago. And then let that dynamic play out and let it draw itself to what seems to me its logical, inevitable conclusion, and not get in the way of it. Not at any moment say, but this person survived it all and learned an important lesson, and that makes it all okay.
Sure.
That's kind of something that a lot of writers, myself included, that's kind of our default setting.
Sure. It's internal pressure. It's pressure from a publisher, what have you, whatever it might be.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like the last book, The Innocents. Like, there are people who would not read that book because of the subject matter.
Yeah.
And I expect that may be true with this one as well. I did feel if I wanted to be true to myself and to the world that we are living in, I had to go the route that I went with this.
I'm glad you did. I want to ask a little bit about the language and some of the stories that get told here, because in your acknowledgments at the end of the book, you note a couple of books that you had to go through just to find the right curse words and swear words. I just got such a kick out of reading some of the lines that these people have. It's almost like little punchlines to their character and what have you. And you dug deep to find all that.
I did. Reference. I mean, I've done that with all my books, right, to a certain extent.
Yeah.
And the Dictionary of Newfoundland English has been kind of my standby. Every novel I've written, I have spent quite a bit of time reading through the Dictionary of Newfoundland English and looking for the way that Newfoundlanders spoke in generations past as a way of grounding them in that place and also giving a sense to readers that this is a different world and these characters do think in a different way. When I started writing The Innocents, it occurred to me that this was so far back that actually a lot of the characters who end up washing up on the beach there are not Newfoundlanders. They're Europeans.
Sure.
And that's even more true in The Adversary.
I really, really love that about this book is that, you know, we are seeing the day-to-day of this port and, you know, fish coming in, fish going out, and the exoticness of all these ships arriving from these far-off lands.
Yeah.
It really does give you a sense of what it must have been like.
Yeah, well, it's odd. I've always spoken of, and most people think of these Newfoundland ports as incredibly isolated from the outside world. And some ways they were, but in some ways they were not. There were ships and people from all over showing up these larger ports to collect the fish and take it back to Europe and stuff like that. When I realized, okay, I've got these characters that are not Newfoundlanders, I went looking for something that would tell me how did people in Britain speak at the time. And I found this fantastic book called A Dictionary of the Vulgar Tongue.
That's the one I remember. Yeah, right.
And it was compiled in 1790-something, I think.
Holy
it was 1780
smokes,
something,
right.
And then updated again in 1811.
revised edition.
That's right. Well, it's just sort of, there was way more swearing than it had ended up in there, I guess. So they, and to be fair, at the time, vulgar just meant common. So it was, this is how people on the dock speak. This is how people in the bars and in the brothels speak. And like the Dictionary of Newfoundland English, it was unbelievably entertaining.
And just a huge resource.
An amazing resource.
Yeah.
And it just allowed me to ground those characters in the time with the way that they spoke so that they were speaking authentically out of that time and place. And it also, I mean, we've been talking a lot about how dark this book is, but one of the places where I hope readers can find some light and solace is in the language of the book itself.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And someone asked me recently about some particularly graphic, awful things that happened to people in the book. The amputation and the...
lots
of stuff.
There are tough things,
and
yes.
They're pretty... And I try my best to present those as realistically as I can. But the language this person pointed out is actually quite beautiful. It forced me to ask myself, well, what the hell was I doing there? And most of what I know about these books I learn after the fact when people ask me questions and I'm forced to think about it.
Right.
But I think in some ways I'm trying to acknowledge that sense of awe that I often have when I am doing the research for these books and see the kinds of things that people were forced to go through, that they managed to survive and build a life despite.
It absolutely puts us there, too, and it's just one of the other elements that you use to put us in that moment. I'll have to ask, you're at the Festival of the Authors this week. This is kind of nice. It seems like you're kind of a headline guy. So,
yeah, it seems. Yeah. I'm not really sure what's going on there, but it's an off-site event, so it's not actually happening down at Harborfront this year. It's at Supermarket in
Kensington Market. Yeah, great location.
And apparently it's sold out.
A few pints will be raised.
Yes, yeah. But I did see someone pointed out to me that they will have a rush line at the event on the night of.
Okay. What is the night of, by the way?
It's this Thursday.
This Thursday.
Thursday evening. So I did write to my publicist, Scott, and said, this is a book launch, right? is that what we're talking about here?
It sounds like a party. It sounds like a nightclub party. Yes. Yeah, no
So
kidding.
It should be a good time. There's going to be some music, and Carol Off will be talking to me on stage, which I'm very excited about.
You're good hands there.
Yeah.
She lives in my neighborhood,
so
that's so great. Michael Crummy, I am such a fan, and I think this is one for the ages, and I smell major feature film in your future with this one. So,
well, you know what I say, show me the money.
Show me the money. I love it.
And carry on.
Carry on. And thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for this book.
It's a pleasure, Mark. Thanks for talking to me.
Author Michael Crummy's titles over the years, we've talked about them, River Thieves, The Wreckage, Galore, Sweetland, The Innocents, and the latest, The Adversary, which arrived in stores and online yesterday, and you're with The Oasis, our look at arts and culture.